everyone, the time. Welcome to a Wednesday edition of The Mornings with Ed Show. Delighted to have you with us this morning on a beautiful, spectacular Laguna Beach morning. As we do each and every morning, we welcome the president and CEO of Wealthwise Financial Services, the award-winning, the silver tongue-winning, Laureen Gilbert. Welcome, Laureen.
Good morning, Ed. Good to be here.
It's great to have you this morning. How are you today?
I'm wonderful. Thank
good.
You.
Good, good. Let's get right into it here.
Sure.
Yesterday, the CEO of Blackstone warns of an impending energy crisis. And what we're seeing is oil at $85 a barrel right now. And he was essentially defending fossil fuels during a transition to green energy. Will this eventually become a carbon emissions from fossil fuels versus profits from fossil fuels battle down the road? Or how do you see the transition happening or how it needs to happen?
Right. So this is with Stephen Schwartzman, who was speaking, and he was speaking at the Future Investment Initiative Conference in Saudi Arabia. And he was talking about that there is this shortage of energy, and we're in the middle of this transition of the world trying to move from fossil dependency to green energy. But like he said, or you know, actually like Larry Fink of BlackRock said, it's not going to happen in an instant, and that's where policymakers need to be careful. While there is a desire to move towards green energy, it can't happen overnight. And trying to force it to happen so quickly is what's causing the price of oil to go up so rapidly. And in fact, very well, the expectations are that it will go to $100 a barrel. Which is staggering because it's already up 75% this year. So, you know, Ed, everybody wants to head towards a greener environment, but we are fossil fuel dependent around the globe, not just the United States of America, but especially emerging market countries. And what I would say as well is that what he was saying at this conference was, this could literally cause social unrest. This, when there is, it can cause so much disruption that and so much oppression for people who are just barely making it. That those are the things that make for social unrest.
Right. And I can't be a hypocrite. I put $100 worth of gas in the truck just yesterday. So I you know, I'm a consumer of it. With that said, do you see it kind of like a clearance sale, if you will, with oil producers, knowing that time is short, so there's gouging going on, and we will see upwards of $100 a barrel?
I don't know. I don't think it's as much gouging as it's the reality of supply and demand and the markets and what we've got. And if we close off our ability to produce oil and gas and fossil fuels, we're going to continue to see price spikes up. So it's hurting people, and there is a direct translation between the price of gas going up and consumer spending going down. And we've talked about this a lot, Ed, but two-thirds of GDP is in the United States is driven by consumer spending. Now, thankfully, this week we saw consumer confidence going up even higher. So that's a good sign. But if oil continues to go up, you will see consumer confidence going down.
Okay. All right. This week we've been just actually for the last couple of weeks here on the program, we've been discussing Facebook and the problems that they're facing with the Facebook papers coming out. And a lot of people are calling for Mark Zuckerberg to either step down or be ousted. But I'm reading that the tiered stock structure from Facebook makes ousting him practically impossible, because although he owns less than half of the company's stock, the class of shares that he holds vote with much more power than common stock. Can you explain that to us?
Yeah, there are different share classes. And this is something for people who are interested in ESG, environmental, social, governance policies of companies. Facebook fails in this regard, because of that, in effect, tiered stock pricing. And it does not allow for, you can see why Mark Zuckerberg would have set it up this way to favor him.
Brilliant.
But if you're an ESG investor, you need to have that framework, or many people would have that framework of looking down on that kind of structure, because it's not a good governance structure, meaning allowing for there to be changes at the very top.
Right. So it's brilliant, but brilliant like Dr. Evil brilliant. It really is.
Brilliant in that it benefits the founder and owner,
right?
But it doesn't necessarily favor investors.
Right. So even if the board and every single shareholder united against him, he'd still get his way. He's like a king at Facebook, right?
That's really what it is.
Wow.
It is a fiefdom there.
Wow. All right. So let's talk about Tesla. Tesla's worth $1 trillion now. Wow.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Well, they joined the $1 trillion club, and there aren't too many of those stocks that have, and now Tesla's one of them. And what drove it to that price was the deal with Hertz, as well as their earnings, right? Two things came out this week, that Hertz is now going to buy Tesla's and improve their EV. And remember, Ed, it wasn't that long ago you and I were talking about their bankruptcy situation.
Right.
And boy, they have come out of that incredibly strong. So they're a player again. And what they're trying to do is change their reputation and really change the rental car industry, realizing that eventually these cars are going to be autonomously driving.
Right.
And who's going to be at the top of that? It's going to be Tesla, because they're ahead of everybody else. So Tesla's earnings, they just smashed it. And the reason they smashed it is that they were not dependent upon the semiconductor market the way many other companies were. They were able to navigate internally. They're really a software-driven company. They've been saying that for a long time. And they were able to navigate all of that incredibly well. So Tesla is, their stock continues to grow.
Yeah. And when you mentioned Hertz during this, wow, what a different position they find themselves in today than just 9 months ago.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You sure do.
Yeah. So, let's stay on Tesla for a minute, because Elon Musk's personal wealth is nearing the $300 billion mark. And what we've been talking about this morning is the billionaire's tax plan that's being floated by Senate Finance Committee Chair Ron Wyden. Is it a good, fair first step? And if not, what would you adjust about it?
Well, this has been on the table before. And what's interesting to me, I mean, certainly, I'm not a billionaire. I don't think you're a billionaire. I mean, there aren't too many billionaires out there.
I'm about a billion short.
Exactly. So, we're not in that camp. So what I always like to do, because, it's easy to say tax those other people, Ed, right? Because, people who aren't millionaires want to tax millionaires, and people who aren't billionaires want to tax billionaires. But what's really important is to look at those billionaires themselves and say, what do they think of it?
Right?
So what's interesting is people like Warren Buffett have been talking about that he would be okay with a billionaire tax. Now, whether he supports this one or not, I'm not sure.
Okay.
But that's what I say, is that when it comes to taxation, ask the people whom it's affecting and see what they have to say about it. Because at the end of the day, Ed, it's all about how do we raise revenue for the things that we want to spend on in America. We need certain things. There has to be a safety net, right? That's why we have Social Security. It's why we have Medicare. Those are important safety nets that need to be in place. But we've also got to be able to fund them. We've got to be able to fund, now there's this infrastructure package.
Right.
But what's really trying to be accomplished in this reconciliation is a much more aggressive package. And what is good is that it's becoming more moderated, because we've already put over $5 trillion into the economy. We don't need to overheat the economy more. If we have too much more stimulus, it drives inflation up.
Right.
That's one of the major causes of inflation. It's too much stimulus.
So what about I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, we want to have enough money into the economy to stimulate the economy towards growth, but we're there. So now, you know, and what I want to say, the Fed is meeting again.
Right.
And what I think we're going to hear is that they are going to start tapering in November, and I think they're going to talk about the rate hikes starting in 2022. Everything's being pushed up. Why? We have so much stimulus coming to the economy. And by the way, there's still $4.5 trillion in money market funds. That's a lot of money sloshing around in the economy. So when we say, you know, what's going on and where do people have all this money and why are prices going up? It's a lot of it is stimulus driven.
So back to the Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, and the other 700 billionaires that are mm-hmm. part of this. Would we agree that America taxes work, not wealth, and those with what, you know, with plenty of wealth have ways to avoid direct taxes like you and I?
Of course. So I just heard yesterday of another person that I know, moving to Puerto Rico for tax purposes. It's a legal way of legally mitigating your tax liability. And by the way, in Puerto Rico has the greatest share of billionaires of anywhere in the world, because that's where they're going to flock. That and then Monte Carlo, right? Both being kind of tax haven areas for billionaires.
Okay. And just I'm going to throw this one out there. I know it would be impossible. I don't think that we have the infrastructure to make it happen, really. But what about a progressive spending tax, which would tax all Americans when they spend, not when they work, save, give, or die, whatever?
Yeah, and you're talking more about what the Europeans have in their value-added tax, their VAT. And you know what? It has hurt their growth. What you got to understand that is the more you tax people, the less growth there is. If you allow the economy, once again, I go back, two-thirds of our economy is consumer-driven. If you tax people too much, they don't have money to spend. So then you have an overweighted government and an underweighted private sector with people who don't have enough money to keep the economy going. Our economy is driven by people spending money, not by taxing them more.
Okay. And you talked about growth. We're in the middle of earnings season right now.
We are.
Yeah. Tell us what's happening. What can we expect?
We are. So people keep asking me the question, you know, what's going to keep stocks continuing to move forward? It's gone up so much. Well, it has. But it's all about earnings, Ed. It's all about looking at the numbers of these companies. And once again, we're having a blockbuster earnings season. I think, you know, the average earnings beat is 76%. And we're well over 80. We're about 84% right now before in our earnings season. Last earnings season was 87% earnings beat. But if we can track above 80, it's another stellar earnings season. And that's what's going to keep prices going up on stocks, is based on their earnings. And their year-over-year numbers are still staggering. So that is, you know, we expect this to continue, even though we do see signs of slowing down. And what we're hearing from these companies is how difficult it's been to navigate the supply chain issues. And what I would tell investors is to expect the supply chain issues to not be resolved in a quarter or two quarters, but in a year or 2 years. It's going to take a while for supply chain issues to moderate. And once it moderates, inflation will probably moderate as well. So we expect there to be continued high inflation numbers for a year to 2 years and then moderate. We do think that the moderation is still going to be above, you know, maybe 2.5% or so, but certainly manageable.
You're really good at what you do. You really are. the Fed is meeting. What are we expecting to hear when they come out? What are you thinking?
Yeah. So what we were just talking about is that we're expecting them to discuss tapering in November, and we expect them to start addressing when they're going to start doing rate hikes and preparing the markets. The markets, by the way, have priced in two rate hikes in 2022. So the market is already prepared for that. So that's the good news. I think that the markets have, in effect, priced in rate hikes. And that is good news because I think we are going to see at least the start of rate hikes in 2022. And you'll remember it wasn't that long ago we were talking about rate hikes in 2023. Right. But that's all been pushed forward, once again, because of all the stimulus, because of the economy moving so fast, because it's hot in the economy. What the Fed has to do is moderate that enough to where it puts it kind of under control, but not so much that they smash it and we go into a recession. So it's a tricky business. And we're also waiting to hear if Powell will continue in his role or not,
right,
because Biden has the opportunity to change who is the Federal Reserve chairperson. And interestingly enough, you know, Yellen, because Yellen and Powell had worked together before, Yellen is supporting him and saying, I'd like to see him continue. So we'll see what the president has to say, because ultimately that's his appointee on who he gets to appoint into that role. The only black eye that he has is the trading scandal with both Rosengren and Kaplan, the two, you know, to Boston and Dallas, or Dallas and Boston, on those two presidents who were trading, and that did put a black eye on the Fed. So they're changing their regulations there. We'll see if that's enough of a black eye for Powell to lose his position, because certainly he's done a great job navigating through the pandemic.
Right. And your gut feeling stays or goes?
You know, that's a tough one. If it were me, I would keep him because he's done a good job. But it is a political appointee position, right, and it might be politics over, over just doing a good job.
And playing the devil's advocate, and let's talk politics for just a second. If they keep him, then he's the one that is in charge of the rate hikes and not the new appointee, right?
That's true. That's a really good point. Hadn't thought of that.
That's what I do.
Yes. And of course, let's remind the audience that the Fed is supposed to be neutral,
right,
and not be political, even though it's a political appointee.
Exactly.
But they're supposed to keep their distance from, you know, they don't take orders from the president or any other part of the administration.
Right. They have to be completely independent.
Yes.
I can't tell you how much I love our discussions on Wednesday. How do our listeners find you?
They can give us a call, 949-748-1177, or look us up online, wealthwisefinancial.com.
As always, thank you for the conversation. She is the president, CEO, the award-winning president, CEO of Wealthwise Financial Services, Laureen Gilbert, in the Wealthwise Moment. Thank you so much, Laureen.
Thank you, Ed. Have a great day.
You too. 8:19, it's the Mornings with Ed Show. Money, 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 money.